going to tell him?
All we got to do is tell him to throw a rock through their window.
And then knock on the door and sell them all the burglar alarm.
Right. Come on, let's hit this cathode ray tube.
Okay, ready? Here I go. Whee!
And whee!
Whatever. WXOJLP, Northampton. This is Active Ingredients. Last October, Kyle Hentz was at Hampshire College previewing the film 9/11 Press for Truth. After the showing, there was an audience Q&A that touched on many issues remaining central to the current paradigm. I did not play this recording at the time, so here is Kyle Hentz, October 10th, 2006, at Hampshire College.
First of all, thank you very much for coming and showing up. It's a very important subject. I wanted to know how many for you is this sort of this new material, or is this did you learn things that you didn't know before you came here tonight? Okay, about half of you. That's good. The folks that left, I don't know what they would say. I wanted to start just by also thanking the organizers, Serena Himmelfarb. Brendan McQuaid, Adam Herter, also Ed Russell from Active Ingredients Media. He just we did an interview during the film. As you can imagine, I've seen it a few times. also Mary Carey, who did a piece about the film in the Daily Hampshire Gazette. So anytime we get media attention on this thing, we celebrate. Anyway, my name is Kyle Hentz. I was approached by a couple of young filmmakers about 18 months ago. With this project. They both were graduates of the Chicago Film School based in Chicago called the Columbia Film School. Ray Novoselsky was the director, and John Duffy was the director of photography. And they had taken the project, you know, along. They'd gotten some money from their parents and just dove in. They thought that they would, you know, tell this story. I think the story was they were drinking beer one night. And it was pretty late, and they got on the internet, and they came across this stuff. And they came across Paul's timeline. And so that's how it all started. And they got talking, and they said, well, maybe we ought to make a film about this. And this is their first film. It's my first film. You know, it's just a huge undertaking. You know, I mean, anything worth doing is worth doing well, but it's also inevitably a tremendous amount of work. And I want to thank Rory O'Connor, who is sort of the seasoned hand that I invited into the process from Global Vision in New York. He's made a lot of films. He was in network television for a while. He won a couple of Emmys, and you know he was an invaluable resource trying to get this film done. And then we're working hard on trying to get it distributed. As you can imagine, it's not something the mainstream media was like knocking down our doors to try to get on television in this country. We've probably screened it about 70 or 80 times. Libraries, people's homes, art house cinemas, that sort of thing. And that's been part organized by thanks to Robert Greenwald, who set up something called Brave New Theaters for his films, which he prices very low and reasonably so it can get out. And he's doing Iraq for Sale right now about Halliburton and the contracting in Iraq. So he set up this infrastructure where you could come and host a screening, sign up, invite other people, all from one website. And then it has you can put in your area code or your zip code rather, and it shows you where the nearest screening is. So you can go to bravenewtheaters.com and do that. We also have a listing of all the screenings at our website, which is 911pressfortruth.com. So anyway, I'm pleased to see so many that came tonight, and obviously I'm here to answer your questions, to talk about things that are in the film, things that are not in the film, your impressions. I'd like to hear, maybe we can just start by hearing from people who've not, this is for whom this is new, just impressions or things that they learned that they didn't know. We'll go there. Start in the back.
What in Europe, do you have any sense of what kind of regular coverage this story is getting in the rest of the world that we're just unaware of here?
It's fair to say there's a lot more skepticism, or considerably more skepticism, about the official story and widespread suspicions of some kind of insider complicity or government involvement or something more than what we've suspect or been told overseas. I mean, I think there's been some polls done in Canada, there's been a poll in Germany, and this was some time ago, and the numbers were pretty high, I mean, in terms of the amount of skepticism. And the younger the demographic, the more skepticism there is. And Zogby did a poll in May that found that 43% of Americans suspect a cover-up, and 45% would support a new investigation, which is what we're trying to have make happen with this film and other films, obviously, making that case. So just to finish, our film was bought overseas by television networks, and it has aired in Spain, a small network in Barcelona, and Norway, and several times in Norway, and Al Jazeera bought it and aired it three times. Japan has made a very powerful documentary. The CBC is on this. They interviewed Bob McElvain, who's the only guy featured, the only man in the film, a family member, interviewed him extensively, and now he is saying outright his suspicions of government complicity. So Canada, Japan, I was featured in a documentary that aired in Greece. So I would say, you know, I'd say in this country we're about half suspect a cover-up, or worse, and then overseas, I would think similar numbers, if not higher, and I think the numbers are the same in 9/11 families, if not higher than the national average.
Kyle, could you say a little bit about why the filmmakers came to you and also how the push for the investigation is going forward?
Well, thanks to Adam Herder. Somehow Ray crossed paths with Adam. I'm not sure how that happened, but Adam and I had worked together with Unanswered Questions and 9/11 Citizens Watch, I guess, 9/11 Citizens Watch, which is a watchdog group that I founded right before the 9/11 Commission came together for the first time. And we attended all the commission hearings and stuff. And Adam told him about me and said, you ought to call Kyle, because I had been working on a documentary myself and sort of hit a brick wall. And I got burned out and couldn't raise any more money. And so when Ray Novoselsky called me and he told me his approach, how he was going to sort of dig into the subject, I thought, this feels right. Feels like it's going to be a winner. And so I put $3,000 on my credit card and we were off and running. Thanks to Bank of America, by the way. Thankfully, the debt's...
What? The new investigation, is that moving or is that...
Well, yeah, there are a number of candidates that are running for office that are running on a platform that includes calling for a new investigation. There's one or two in Vermont. I think there's one in New Hampshire. There's Bob Bowman in Florida, who's running against a stalwart Republican conservative, like 5 or 6 termer. He won his primary, and he's calling for a new investigation. This is a veteran Vietnam fighter pilot. So hopefully some of them will get in. And I've also been lobbying members of Congress for years. The only one who really listened was Cynthia McKinney. Representative Grijalva from Arizona co-sponsored an all-day briefing that she held on Capitol Hill, where a lot of experts came and sort of picked apart the 9/11 Commission report pretty well. So there's an awareness on the Capitol Hill about some of these issues, but there's a general fear and kind of closed-mindedness, to it. But we are lobbying them. Every member will eventually get a copy of this, and we're talking with certain representatives like Kucinich, or we're trying to reach Kucinich and other members, in hopes that they will co-sponsor or sponsor actual legislation, because you don't have to speculate one bit in order to prove the case that the official story does not hold up. It's not the whole story. And you don't have to speculate at all to make a case that it needs to be reinvestigated. We already know that the commission has zero integrity. They lied. They withheld information. We now know that they left out material about an operation called Able Danger that ID'd Atta over a year before 9/11. Witnesses from the Navy came forward that ran the program, and they chose to just simply leave it out like it never happened. It didn't exist. Woodward's new book reveals that there were meetings in which George Tenet, the head of the CIA, and Kofor Black alerted Condi Rice, John Ashcroft, and Donald Rumsfeld in July with the highest possible alert warning, you know, 10 on a scale of 1 to 10, and they did nothing, you know. And we have a Democrat, the Democrat on the commission, Richard Benveniste, who looks like the hero grilling Condi Rice. Well, when she was doing it, it's all show. He had already had the briefing with Tenet in January that year and knew that Tenet had come to her with a very detailed warning, specific urgent warning. That was just for show. All of that meeting, he colluded with Zelikow to keep that out of the report. The NORAD tapes, which revealed like all these conversations, when those came out, Hamilton said, well, you know, Kane and Hamilton, the chair and the vice chair, they came out with a book recently, right? In the book, they try to make like, they, you know, grabbing more FaceTime and saying that, well, you know, they look like they lied. NORAD lied. You know, Patty says they lied, they all lied. It's true. Not only the commissioners, but government officials from the top down. It's a fact. It's Zelikow. He colluded with Zelikow to leave that all the details out of the commission report. It's an easy case to make to your senator or your representative that this needs to be reinvestigated. This Foley scandal taking up a lot of airtime. Guess what's not getting much airtime? The revelations about these meetings. July 10th with Rice, July 17th with Ashcroft. I mean, it's really an outrage.
What do you think is being covered up?
One of the answers is certainly incompetence. You know, I say to many people, I get into a debate about this issue. You know, you have people say, well, the government did it. To me, that seems a very simplistic generalization. And the government's huge. And I think there's a lot of evidence to suggest players outside of the government. Look how much control private enterprise, private contractors, subcontractors have over political processes in this country.
It seems to me that it would be a huge mistake to start a war with a nuclear power.
Yeah, exactly.
So where do you go from there is my question.
Well, obviously, any new investigation needs to look at everything. You know, and obviously, if you're going to follow some of those trails, they end at the desk of Cheney. Well, I often, you know how the government's floated these persons of interest when there's an investigation going on, whether it's anthrax or the bombing at the Olympics in Atlanta? Well, we have persons of interest. You know, there's bodies of evidence that suggest, wait a minute, this official lied. Why? What is that person trying to cover up? So we need to look there. Or, you know, who was coordinating the war games that just happened to coincide and all, you know, on that day, which is something we didn't, you know, go into in the film.
What would happen if, you know, you uncovered that Pakistan was involved in this and it was out and everyone knew about it? I mean, what happens then? Does the U.S. then retaliate somehow? I mean, where would you want to go from there?
Well,
because I feel like is kind of like the crux of why they might.
If you investigate it, you find that it was a collaboration of the U.S. government and Pakistan.
Yeah, I mean, I think if you follow that trail, I mean, historically speaking, you could go back and look at the roots of the ISI. I mean, obviously, we don't have names to attach to, except for General Mahmoud Ahmed, which is the top. But if you look at the history of the ISI, you know, it's very closely allied with the CIA. And you know, billions of dollars were funneled through the ISI to fund the Mujahideen in Afghanistan. So that relationship is longstanding. And look what else happened under the watchful eye, presumably, of the U.S. government and the intelligence agency. Khan, from Pakistan, AQ Khan. So, you know, all of this stuff, this trade was proliferating on the black market all these years, moving to countries which are now axis of evil or what have you, to Libya, to Korea, you know. And that's been exposed recently thanks to some investigative efforts. I don't know where they were when it came to that wire transfer, but especially after the Dubai ports deal, you know where that money went through? It went through, it was from a bank in Dubai. The order was placed out of Pakistan, presumably, in Saeed Sheikh, who, by the way, according to Musharraf, get this, Musharraf said on his way out of the country before he left that Saeed Sheikh was MI6. That's the CIA equivalent in the UK. And apparently Khalid Sheikh Mohammed also has ties to MI6. So this is where you go with all this stuff. And so you have to do it. I look at the work of Nafis Ahmed as an example of how a scholar would approach this. He, you know, he spells out chapter and verse, finds the credible sources, and it basically has built a case. It seems like it's American policy to work hand in glove with the terrorists or with Al-Qaeda. This was happening in the Balkans, where Al-Qaeda trainees trained in camps in Afghanistan or Pakistan were flown in to work alongside special forces to fight the Serbs with the Kosovo Liberation Army, the KLA.
Who wrote that?
Nafis Ahmed, The War on Freedom and The War on Truth, which is more recent.
Actually, first, sorry, before I ask you the question, just in response to what you were saying, I think it would be premature to say now what the response should be. I think what this movie's asking for is an investigation to see what the situation is. I mean, if you already decide what your response is going to be before you really know what happened, that would be ridiculous.
That's not what I'm asking. What I'm asking is that to weigh what our options would be at that point.
I mean, I just feel like you wouldn't really know your options until you know what the facts are.
But isn't the answer staring us in the face?
Well, she did raise the question. I mean, when she's interviewed.
In the face, sir, if we cannot find the truth in an investigation, and the inherent truth lies in the fact that us good people can't feel comfortable in this country right now because there is evil at the top of it, then isn't the answer, as Thomas Jefferson might say, to rebel and have a revolution every 20 years to bring back freedom? Because, and there's laughter because it is so uncomfortable for us sitting here to consider the fact that, you know what, you cannot organize an investigation in this system because the greed and corruption is so great. But now, what does that mean? We are representing this goodness by being here today. And the answer is not always as hard as it may seem, because what we have to do is just be good and represent that. I mean,
well, this is how I would answer it. And one of my colleagues in this work is a woman named Catherine Austin Fitz. I'm a lifelong independent. Okay, I've been a registered independent all my life, and you know, basically vote for the candidate or the issue. Now, Catherine's a lifelong conservative and a Republican. In fact, for years she worked in conservative. She worked for the first Bush administration in the Department of Housing. Okay, her eyes were open. Her eyes were open in the level of corruption, the whole sex stuff, all this stuff that's like coming to the surface now. She got a glimpse of. She talks about control files, how certain people have skeletons in their closet, certain other people know about those skeletons and use them against people to manipulate people. And then when the timing is right, they'll let one of those skeletons out or they'll leak this or that. So she really has an incredible insight to the workings of government. And what she talks about, the government basically targeted her because she threatened to undermine basically a racket within the democratic system, within the democratic party, where through, I don't know, you've seen The Sopranos, there was an episode where there was a scamming of the housing and urban development, certain projects.
Yep.
They would basically be sold off on pennies in the dollar, and organizations, people would come in and buy them up and then flip them for huge profits. And this is a scam that had been going on for years, and she created a system that used the internet very early on to put it out for bid. So she was getting a lot more per dollar, on the dollar than previously. And that was upsetting someone's scam. That was cutting into someone's action, And in her case, it was a Democratic Party. I think it was Cuomo was the head of it. at the time. And so she was eventually targeted. She was pushed out. Then she created software for a company that threatened to expose, or did expose, how money flowed into local communities, your community, any community, using federal data. And it was called Community Wizard. And they raided her company, took her computers, her software, and then fabricated charges and found someone who had a vested interest in the old establishment status quo within that system to file a suit against her. She lost $6 million of her own money, her mansion in D.C., because she was very successful at what she'd done in her career in money management and finance and what have you. And who knows what kind of value in the company that she had just built. And she spent years fighting them. Eventually, she won. But she lost almost everything, and she was targeted, smeared in every way you can imagine. They tried to go to her family and accuse her of being a lesbian, I mean, just to turn her family against her. And this is what she lived. Now, what she says is that until we change how the money works, that's the revolution that we need. Until we change how the money works in this world, then everything that we do and how we operate in the world, how we are in the world, in terms of our consumption and so on, until we change fundamental relationships with the earth itself, but also with money, because that's the mediation, then nothing's going to happen. And what Jefferson also said, he warned us against a standing army. You know, the framers did not... warned us and did not want to have a standing army because they knew about the abuses, but he also warned against the central bank. And the central bank sets up this whole system which is mirrored at the World Bank level with the IMF and that whole agenda. And that's, to me, if you want a peaceful revolution, and to me that's the only option, we vote every day with the dollars that are in our pockets, you know, and we become the media. Because the money has corrupted the system across the board. It's now, voting is privatized. So you've got Diebold and ENS and Sequoia, owned by conservative Republican groups, Republican people. So it's been privatized. And it's like $1, one vote. So, you know, and the media, of course, is continuing, you know, to being conglomerated. And so we have to become the media. And we, you know, so I agree with you. And I share your frustration. And I... You know, are we banging our head against the wall thinking we're going to get an investigation? Maybe, but it's a point of friction. We can create some heat, put some attention on this. Other people are going to choose to try to educate people about false flag terror and, you know, and that whole history, and that's a noble effort. And if we don't get any progress with a member of Congress willing to sponsor this, to create a debate on the Hill or whatever, fine, we'll look somewhere else to have some kind of investigation. But to me, until these conversations go back to some kind of economic revolution, fundamental economic revolution, then I don't think there's much hope. Or things will get worse, and eventually it'll come back around to that subject. I said you, and then,
I think you may have just started to scratch on the answer to the question I'm about to ask. What you just said about private interests, big business, first of all, I give you a standing ovation for this talk. The connecting the dots is just flawless and stunning. And the whole time I was waiting for the other shoe to drop. You know, it's like Patty says at the end, why would they do this? I mean, there's a lot of people I want.
You were waiting for answers.
Well,
or
if you connect the dots as you know, you go into what Greg Palast uncovered about the resumes and the private connections of the top members of the Bush administration. And then you go and look at that little document called The Project for a New American Century that says a Pearl Harbor-like event is necessary to initiate the 10-year war plan, War for Oil. I was waiting for this whole movie to telescope into that. I mean, I hope you're going to make a sequel. But maybe what you're saying is that we need to uncover this question and make people want to answer it. But I'd like to hear your comments on those other dots.
You know, we touch very briefly. We show Building 7 collapsing from two angles and mention, and one of the family members mentions the first time you know, a steel frame structure had collapsed. And but this 9/11 Mysteries is a film produced out in San Diego. This woman put, you know, like mortgaged her house to make this film, and she's taking a very, understand, a very kind of methodical, scientific, you know, approach to the mysteries, you know, around what happened. So, I mean, there are other films out there that sort of take this further, if you will. So,
the point that's made in this movie is that the information is all there, but it's fragmented and nobody's connecting the dots. So I was kind of hoping that it would all be in here.
Well, we do hope, we are going to put together a proposal for a television series. And we made this for very little money compared to like what a typical documentary will cost that ends up on PBS or what have you. And so we are going to try to leverage the work we've done toward a series, and we'll go to HBO or CBC in Canada or what have you, and follow a lot of these threads much more deeply, and then perhaps speculate, perhaps look at different theories. You know, we haven't decided, you know, we're just working on a treatment now. But the area project for A New American Century was in an earlier cut. It'll be in deleted scenes and bonus material in a later release of the film. And so that is talked about. We did go there, if you will. Clearly, that if you're looking at motive for looking the other way or letting something happen or being complicit directly in planning an operation of this kind, so you might look there, certainly. You know, one signatory to the Project for New American Century is Dov Zakheim. He was the comptroller at the Pentagon prior to 9/11. This is another focus of Catherine Austin Fitz. On the 10th of September, there was a press conference held, and Rumsfeld confirmed that there were $2.3 trillion that basically gone missing out of the Pentagon, what they called undocumented adjustments. And that's, you know, it's kind of cooked books is the reality there. And that issue just disappeared, you know, with 9/11. And all of a sudden, all this missing money was not something anyone was concerned about. And any time it was asked, they were asked about it. Guess what their excuse was? Well, 9/11, we lost people. It just happened to be the side of the building where these guys were working and trying to follow these trails and get to the bottom of where this money went. And they did lose people, but they're still using it as an excuse for the failure to produce an annual audited financial statement, which they still haven't done. So, I mean, it is so bad that... I mean, to me, the number boggles my mind. It's so bad in this country. The media is so failed that we have a missing $2.6 trillion. And Catherine Austin Fitz, a former Bush administration official, can hardly get any focus on the question. It's too overwhelming. It's too big of an issue. I don't know. But, you know, follow the money, who benefited, all of those things are areas that obviously people have looked into and we need to continue to look into. So we, you know, it does leave you sort of wanting for answers, but you know, in a way that's a good thing, because if you leave here hungry, if you leave here motivated, if you leave here angry, then you can go out and, you know, get the film or get another film and do a home screening and call your member of Congress, you know, educate your family members, whatever. 9/11 was always, for me, a window through which I could try to understand a lot of a hidden history and stuff that's been buried and stuff that's wrong. And so that's the way I've looked at it. And it is overwhelming for a lot of people. But we made this film to try to just get in the door and open up new eyes to what's been happening, to what's happened, the cover-up. And so far, the response has been really good from people who haven't seen or heard any of this, or Republicans, or whatever. Across the political spectrum, people are responding pretty well.
This is Active Ingredients. You are listening to Kyle Hentz in an audience Q&A after screening the film he produced titled 9/11 Press for Truth, October 10th, 2006, at Hampshire College.
Sure, I think I had pointed to you.
First of all, I want to congratulate you, that's plural, for a very well-edited film.
Thank you.
I'm very familiar with the material. Mm-hmm. And I'm going to play devil's advocate right now. This is not an attack, but if I was in the government and I saw this film, I'd say, geez, I'd rather take a rap for incompetence than complicity at any time. I feel you're letting people off the hook with this. Mm-hmm. They were somehow, you know, asleep at the switch.
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, yeah, I mean, that was, obviously, I suspect... Like Laurie said in the film, you know, incompetence or worse. You know, obviously, I suspect the or worse. Again, I think there's enough trails that we pick up on and enough dots that we connect so that the person who, you know, who comes to this without having ever asked even the first question about what we were told will leave wondering, you know, or knowing that really they lied and there's been a cover-up, and then they're off and running, and they follow up and they do their own homework and they connect the dots themselves, and so on and so on. And I don't think we let anyone off the hook. I mean, there's enough material in this film and in the timeline to impeach officials. You know, there's certainly a case for criminal negligence on the part of any number of officials and any number of agencies who either had warnings or were in a position of responsibility on the day of the attack, or, you know, from the FAA to NORAD, you know, to immigration, to the CIA. One thing that was in a piece that we cut out because we didn't interview Kristen Breitweiser, not for lack of trying. We had set something up, but the scheduling snafu kind of, we didn't end up interviewing her. But she wrote in a blog for the Huffington Post 7 documented times that 2 of the alleged hijackers, Al-Madar and Al-Hazmi, slipped through the fingers of the authorities, that they had opportunities or information, or one agency tried to alert another agency, or, you know, a foreign entity or agency was following them and they didn't do the handoff properly or what have you. 7 times. And she wrote in her blog, well, you know, she could, 2-3 times she could discount as incompetence. But 7 documented times.
That's her point.
It's exactly her point. She said 7 documented times, that suggests to me something else. And then her next line was purposeful. Well, why? You know, I think that's a very good question. Why would there be the authorities working in a way to essentially assure that whatever was in motion continued in motion? Or who were these guys really working for? It was a documentary done by Ali Mohammed, the trainer for many of the Al-Qaeda top leadership. And he was an informant for the FBI and the CIA. And Fitzgerald is presumably this crack investigator who's going after the leak of Valerie Plame as a high-level CIA agent working on counterproliferation. He's the same guy who sat down and cut a deal with Ali Mohammed. So it's like there's enough there that people should be on the streets banging down the walls and the doors of the members of the House and the Senate saying, get back into this, look at this stuff. Who knows where we'll end up? But clearly it's not where we are now, and not with this official story standing with any credibility whatsoever, and probably pointing to people in the government for everything from incompetence, for which they have not been you know, meted out with any form of justice or accountability, to criminal negligence, to something worse, as Lori suggested. So,
Can anyone who has the DVD of 9/11 Truth show it publicly?
Oh, absolutely.
Okay.
That's what we're encouraging. This is like, we don't have a theatrical distributor, you know. Miramax didn't pick it up. So.
Show it in a public library. New
yeah, Hampshire. They're showing it in libraries all over. We're showing it in Bennington on Thursday night. You can buy it at 911pressfortruth.com. Yeah, just book a time and then sign up at bravenewtheaters.com so other people know about it and you can send invitations and stuff. So, absolutely.
I'm wondering if you can speak a little bit about disinformation in the 9/11 research community.
Disinformation?
Yeah, because I mean, it kind of seems to me like all of this about controlled demolition and whether or not there was a plane in the Pentagon, loose change in particular. It kind of seems like all these hypothetical questions are kind of overshadowing all the real information that was presented in your film. So I'm just kind of wondering like what your perspectives are on that.
Okay, the question is, there seems to be a lot of the hypothetical, I would say oftentimes sensational, controversial theories, speculations about what happened have overshadowed the some of the stuff presented in our film. And the question was, she asked me to talk about disinformation. I guess I would say, just from what little I knew, I wasn't there. But in the 60s, I understand through COINTELPRO, which is a counterintelligence program run by the FBI, there was oftentimes conflicts, seeds of conflict that were planted in activist groups and peace groups so as to make them less effective. You know, sowing seeds of discord and, you know, making things something very personal, whatever. So you have that level of disinformation, I guess you would call it. Who knows, maybe they planted, you know, lies or outright disinformation about, I don't know, maybe they're pushing a case for a massacre and there would be some bogus information floated out or inserted into a group, and then that group would then go forward, present that information as if they'd proven their case, and then all of a sudden the rug is pulled out from under their feet and they're discredited. You know, so is the same thing happening with, you know, with all of this, this so-called, you know, 9/11 movement or 9/11 truth movement? Yeah, I think maybe there is, you know. Do I have any proof of that? No, not outright. I mean, I know that the tendency is for the more sensational a claim, generally, the more attention it's going to get, the sensational the news. You know, that's why we get such pablum on the daily news, is because the sensational, the horrific, there seems to be this sort of general human inclination or obsession with that. And I think that same is true for 9/11, and that generally, over time, it's the more sensational claims for those of us who are most jaded, most suspicious, most fed up with the government. And so I think there's a general inclination to move quickly to an assumption based on a piece of evidence or a body of evidence. And sometimes, in some cases, those assumptions or those conclusions have been wrong. I mean, there was an episode with a film which claimed that there was something attached to the underbody of one of the planes that crashed into the towers. Well, there was footage that a colleague of mine turned up that was not in this documentary. I don't even call it a documentary. It's more of a video. That disproved that case, you know, to my mind, satisfactorily. And, you know, you have claims that it was a hologram that hit the hit the towers. Now, was that planted by someone deliberately? Quite possibly. You know, if you wanted to discredit the people that were doing the good work and sort of methodically putting the pieces together, and you wanted to create a lot of chaos and discord, well, you'd throw out something like that, and then the Hannitys of the world, or the Rush Limbaughs, have the material, the ammunition to throw out to the masses to say, look at these nut jobs. They think a hologram hit the towers. Or no plane at all hit the towers, you know, which is a theory that's being put forward by some pretty prominent people. A former Bush administration official named Morgan Reynolds is now claiming there were no planes that hit any of the towers, no planes at all in the sky. So, I mean, I guess the answer is yes, quite possibly, but, you know, I can't prove anything. You know, I can prove that the official story is a lot of bunk and the government's covered it up, what happened. So that's where I try to put most of my focus, because I haven't written off our system altogether. I mean, it looks like the country's dying and the Constitution has been shredded and it's out in the dumpster, you know, but I still hang on to a shred of hope that things are turning around. I mean, certainly a lot more people don't believe the government story about a lot of things anymore. And the question is, can we organize effectively nationally, locally, to try to change things, you know? And that's up to us.
Nobody knows exactly what happened on September 11th. I think Barry Zwicker in Towers of Deception, book on the media cover-up, does a pretty good job of really getting into the many ways that the media has covered up the 9/11 event. My question for you is, what can we do, you know, we the people, what can we do to help wake up and somehow compel the mainstream media to start answering, to start asking some of the questions that need to be asked?
Well, I think what's been fairly effective, I mean, over time, is just calling up the shows. I mean, you listen now to someone speaking about 9/11 on the Washington Journal, you inevitably get someone calling up who's doesn't always sound like a nutcase. You know, someone asks a good question or puts out some new information or mentions a website. I think that helps. The same would apply for any of the talk shows that are going on. Call them up, you know. Pick an area that you want to really understand and know and have the facts to back you up and the sources, and just make that your, you know, your cause, your focus, and then just hammer your local media. I don't want to say write a letter to the editor. Go and meet someone who writes for the paper and bring them a film. If they're really resistant, bring them Press for Truth. If they have an open mind and they have a scientific sort of mind, bring them 9/11 Mysteries. So I think that's worked. It's just hammering at the media because they've responded, and they've had to respond because our numbers have grown. And, you know, we should also become the media. I mean, Ed has a radio show. You can do your own podcasts. You can, I mean, there's, we still have that at our disposal, you know, at our fingertips, really, you know, to use the internet and do that. So I would encourage that. And I think on a very practical basis, I think we need to support the alternative media and not subscribe to the periodicals that's not feeding us the truth. So become the media, support the smaller players, the local media. You know, and then I really do tell people to unplug from the big banks and support the smaller banks and the credit unions, because it's the economic thing that, you know, I always come back to, and Catherine's always reminding me. She has a great site, Solari.com. Check it out. She identifies the tapeworm, is it tapeworm 20? The 20 biggest banks, many of them Federal Reserve banks. She says, take your money out. Get your relatives to pay off your credit card debt. Pay them 7-8%. It's better than 30, right? You know, I mean, that's a very practical thing that we can all do, you know, is get our money out of the machine that finances, the machine that launders the drug money from Afghanistan, which is another piece that I wanted in the film. You know, 93% of the world's heroin comes from Afghanistan. That number has gone up since we invaded, okay? And the processing and the fields are all within a short helicopter ride of our bases, okay? And so the notion that there's a war on drugs, come on. I mean, the notion that there's a real war on terror, come on.
To your film, bringing it back to some of the other evidence that's out there that I think is fairly compelling, which is the films that show the actual explosives that are bringing the towers down. The only way you deal with that in your film is this one when the widow says, oh, come on, you know, how can a building free fall in 8 seconds? I guess you chose, you didn't want to develop that any further, and maybe other points that are rather compelling but maybe controversial, that would be maybe too much for the general public to sort of say, oh, you're kidding. So how did you make that decision to only sort of present that?
I think in the case of the building's collapse, I mean, I know, obviously I know Sally Reaganhard and Monica, who started the Skyscraper Safety Campaign, and we were telling their story, and they publicly anyway, they never went there. You know, and they didn't bring it. It wasn't brought up in the interview, and it actually caused one of the women that we interviewed to actually pull out because they thought that we had an agenda, that we were going to take their honest opening up and talking about what they experienced confronting the government and getting this commission and ultimately being let down, and then use it to push like our own particular sort of vision or belief or theory, okay? I mean, I worked with professionals to make the film, people that have made other documentaries. And we wanted to make a true documentary, not something that was in the conspiracy genre. That's not to say you can't make, you know, a good documentary and delve into conspiracy theory, but it's not it's a choice that we made not to be speculative. And to get into all of that material which is a complicated subject, would have, I don't know how to say it, except, you know, working with this editor who was not privy to a lot of this material prior to working with us, working with Ray, who was a filmmaker, working with Roy, who was a filmmaker. It's like the whole process seems to have like a life of its own, a certain integrity, and you have to make decisions all along the way that keep to that, that make sure you're on a track. Yes, you have a message, but ours was not to go into that realm, because my own feeling was that we wanted to reach new people, people that had not raised these questions before, that hadn't even had any doubts whatsoever about what the government told them. And we also wanted to stay true to what the families experienced and what they felt. And to my mind, it was enough to just show the two angles of those buildings coming down for people to walk out and go, what happened there? You know.
I've seen a number of the other films, and this is the first film that I thought, well, maybe I could send a copy of this to all my family members because it isn't so out there and radical.
Yeah, well, we'll need people like that to basically start hammering, you know, the member, their representatives in Congress, or to support some wider investigation outside of government, like a Russell Tribunal, like happened during Vietnam. So, you know, that was our goal, and so, you know, you're telling me it worked. Now, I concede that we did not cover a lot of areas. And my hope is, well, obviously others are, for one. And for two, you know, there are, you know, deleted scenes that will end up in a later release. And, you know, hopefully what we've done or what, you know, one of us will pick up the ball and continue the process. And our website, you know, obviously will evolve over time as we continue to push the issue and more stuff is disclosed. You've been waiting for a long time. Thanks for patience.
This film doesn't make any mention of the attack on the Pentagon. Why is that? And also, was there any prior knowledge of a possible attack on the Pentagon as there was with the Trade Center?
The Pentagon has been one of the areas where there's been sort of the biggest schism, I guess, you know, and I think there are those that looked at the photographic evidence that's been made available about the facade of the Pentagon that before it came down, the size of the hole. There's been research into and mention of the air traffic controllers that followed this, that you know, saw this target, you know, this blip on their screen. And they were all breathed a sigh of relief because it had the signature, if you will, in terms of its the maneuverability and the speed that they thought it was a NORAD plane or a fighter jet coming to protect the Pentagon. So it's this sort of stuff, the fact that it hit that side of the Pentagon, the side that had just been rebuilt and strengthened with, you know, shatterproof, bombproof windows or what have you, have, you know, led a lot of people to, oh, and the lack of release of the surveillance footage from the nearby hotel, the Sheridan, or the, they just released footage from the gas station, supposedly showing nothing. All of these things have led people to suspect that it was something other than Flight 77 or a big Boeing. And, you know, so in the void or in that, the void of lack of information or the withholding of all this video, very suspicious, you know, why not disclose it all? Come on. You know, have rushed in a lot of theories about what it was. So some people say, well, it was a cruise missile, or no, it was a smaller plane. It was an A3 to make it, you know, we painted up to look like, you know, just like they planned for Operation Northwoods, which was an operation to, you know, blow up a plane over Cuba and blame it on Cuba because they wanted a war, which was, you know, that was the fact, and this was basically a plan hatched from the Joint Chiefs of Staff and proposed to Kennedy, and he chose not to do it. But there would, you know, be a case where our own government was basically putting forward a plan of false flag terror, blame something on Cuba, kill innocent civilians, and then in order to advance an agenda, in this case, a war with Cuba. So anyway, the theories have been put forward to try to, you know, fill the void of lack of information and holes that look too small for a Boeing and so on. But up against all of that, you have all of this eyewitness testimony, people who live in D.C., who say they saw, you know, a passenger jet, You know, and then the inevitable questions, well, if it wasn't a passenger jet, where's the jet? And what happened to all the bodies and all the people that were on that passenger jet? And I guess, you know, it just became for me something that, it's like with JFK, over 40 years later, you know, even though our own Congress has conceded that there was a wider conspiracy, the media still parroted the line of a lone gunman on the 40th anniversary. How sad. But that's the reality. And the people that have studied the JFK assassination for years are still arguing the forensics. You know, even though we have the video, or the film, the Zapruder film, showing Kennedy's head going back and, you know, obviously being shot from the front, proving another gunman, it's still being argued and debated all these years later. And I think because you had these eyewitness accounts, it's like saying there were no planes. People saw the planes in New York. It just seemed to me that there was enough evidence, and it's enough evidence to put people away, you know, for crimes, for lying, you know, for lying under oath, that build the case on what's solid and irrefutable. You know, and the other thing people have done again and again with the Pentagon, and including Dylan Avery for Loose Change, which I commend for making this, you know, as a film. You know, I don't consider it a true documentary, at least in its earlier renditions, because the story keeps changing and mistakes were made. But there have been a lot of people, including Dylan Avery, saying that the hole is only 16 feet wide. Well, it's 16 feet wide across the second floor. So if you look at the facade, the photos of the facade of the Pentagon, it's 16 feet wide at the second floor. But at the first floor, it's a lot bigger than 16 feet. And yet this 16-foot figure is thrown out again and again. Oh, it's only 16-foot hole. No. So the case that those, you know, the people are trying to make that it was something is bogus. It's bogus. It's there, mistakes are made. And so how do you counter that? Well, just steer clear of it. You know, if there's a real investigation ever, you know, by people we trust, then everything should be looked at. And maybe we'll get enough hard forensic evidence to prove that it was something other than a Boeing. But, you know, as I've seen it, given that the multiple eyewitnesses, but eyewitnesses that counts that differ. On the one hand, you'll have someone who says, you know, they saw, you know, a passenger jet come through. Okay. But then the other, you'll say, well, I saw something that looked like a Learjet. And then on the other hand, you have someone that says it sounded like a cruise missile because the whiny, you know, so you have all of these just differing accounts, and to draw a hard and fast conclusion from all that, to me, just felt, you know, you're on quicksand. It's not a firm foundation. Why not work with what's irrefutable? Why not make a bulletproof case? The government lied to us. Why not, you know, build a case where you have hard, you know, very clear sourcing that suggests, okay, cover up, official story doesn't hold up under scrutiny, and then move appropriately from there. We can debate this stuff until we're blue in the face, but we still haven't settled those questions.
Let's go up top. I'm sorry.
Was it 1995 that you said was the first time that you said that the planes were going to come into the nation to take out buildings?
Was that the first example of planes being used as weapons? I don't think it was the first one, but it was the first one that we put in our film. You know, we went back to 95 with Project Bojinka, which was the operation in the Philippines. The way I look at 9/11, it's like it just changed everything. I mean, it's a cliche almost, but it's true. I mean, it's like the whole world was turned upside down, and everything that has been sort of percolating along this dark trending, or the rise of a police state, the stripping of our liberties, the erosion of our civil liberties, all of these things have been sort of percolating along, and the people who had their power stripped, you know, after the Church Commission hearings, you know, after Watergate, you know, wanted it back, you know, and then 9/11 came along and everything was accelerated, and fear has been used and exploited before, but never like this, you know, to transform and reorganize government. You know, the commission made a whole set of like 40 recommendations. Most of it's all about further centralizing our government, further centralizing intelligence gathering. Is that what we need? I mean, you know, I mean, it's just part of the problem, you know, and the centralizing is happening across the board. And so it's further centralized everything. It's given more power to the military-industrial complex that Eisenhower warned us about. There's a member of the Army in Texas who deals with intelligence matters, had his security clearance stripped over the summer because he sent an email saying that he didn't buy the theory that 19 hijackers could have pulled off 9/11. And, well, where would we look for the who might have been involved? And he pointed the finger in the very general direction of the military-industrial complex. Well, that's a rather large complex at this point, having stolen $2.6 trillion of U.S. taxpayer money, and who knows where that went. So, I mean, you know, he's in hot water because he's pointing that way. I think that's a reasonable place to look for answers. Certainly, it's a place to look for evidence of profiteering and exploitation. And
for everybody here, don't let fear stop you, because I'm going to keep doing what I need to do. And until somebody walks up to me and say, stop, and then I'll deal with it at that point. So I think a lot of people are living in their heads about afraid of this and fear with this. And the point I'm trying to make is really important, is that I'm going to find the truth. And if they come up to me and stop me, then I'll deal with it at that point. That's the important point I'm trying to make, is that don't let fear stop you from finding the truth. Because everybody's got to find their way.
No, I mean, that's a really important point. Because, I mean, things are a little different now, 5 years later. But listen, there's a lot more of us than them. That's the reality. Unless we're vocal, unless we do something about it, then, you know, unless, you know, we see other people speaking out. You know, I mean, I take a tremendous amount. I get a tremendous amount of encouragement when I see someone risking their reputations or speaking out, risking being shut down, or and if we don't speak out when someone is censored, you know, like Mike Malloy gets sacked by Air America, you know, one of the most strident voices. What?
Professor Jones.
Yeah, or Professor Jones, you know, who's just been, who's found, you know, has basically put forward the hypothesis of controlled demolition and assembling evidence and putting that out there, has just been put on paid leave. You know, we need to rally around those people, tell their story, and support them, because otherwise who else is going to take a risk to come forward? And so every time they do that, unless we step up and support them however we can, it'll decrease the chances that someone else will do that. And that's not a good thing.
This is Active Ingredients. You have been listening to Kyle Hentz in an audience Q&A held after the screening of the film he produced, 9/11 Press for Truth, October 10th, 2006, at Hampshire College. Write Ed Russell at valleyfreeradio.org with questions or comments.